Good morning, Ms. Gumberly.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Just for our audio record, I will re-welcome everyone to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It's June 6, 2024. We're about to hear the third of our oral argument cases on our calendar this morning. This is A23-1392, Jessica E. Hertel. Did I pronounce your client's last name?
You did, Your Honor.
Correctly. Appellant versus Robert W. Girding, respondent. Just a few housekeeping matters. Please feel free, Ms. Gemmerling, to adjust the podium using the switch that's at the very front of it. As I mentioned a moment ago, there's an audio recording being made of the proceedings. That's the only recording that should be made. We are live streaming on Zoom. No recording is to be made of the Zoom live stream. Failure to comply with the court's rules could result in contempt or other sanction. The official recording will be available later today on the website or tomorrow. You'll have 15 minutes for your argument. There's obviously no rebuttal since you're arguing alone. And please feel free to proceed after officially identifying yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Samantha Gemberling, G-E-M-B-E-R-L-I-N-G, and I am here on behalf of the appellant in this matter, Jessica Hertel. This is a very straightforward case from the perspective of a practitioner in the district court. And the relevant statute is 257C08. In this matter, I think it's clear on the record that the district court abused its discretion in awarding a substantial amount of visitation to the mother's former significant other partner, who was not the biological father of the child at issue. As this court knows, the parent-child relationship is a significant one, protected in both our state and federal constitution. Minnesota allows the consideration of visitation by a third party unrelated to the child and related to the child, such as a grandparent, in certain limited circumstances, and that's all defined in 257C08. All three subdivisions of the statute have to be met to award visitation to a non-parent third party. In this case, the mother conceded at trial and in her brief before this court as well that that secondary factor, emotional ties between the respondent party and the child, we conceded at trial and conceded here that that single factor was met. However, the other two factors were not met, and for the court to have found that they were met was against the weight of the evidence and was clearly erroneous. The first factor to be analyzed is best interest. The court's finding that visitation was in this child's best interest was clearly against the weight of the evidence and thus a clear...
Pause for one moment.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like our timer might not have started. Go ahead. Thank you.
And so that clear abuse of discretion comes first from an analysis of the best interest factors. So in looking at the best interest factors in a 257C08 case, the court needs to consider all relevant factors. And it was very clear on the record that the mother, when the parties initially ended their relationship, attempted to give the respondent time with the child, and that time was contrary to the child's best interest. There is a replete record about the child coming home unclean, not rested properly, having access to inappropriate video games and things like that.
Can I ask you... You agree, as I read your brief, that the 257C.08 subdivision 4.1 best interest standard is not the same as the 518.17 subdivision 1 custody determination best interest standard.
Correct,
right?
Yes.
And the case law seems to support
correct.
That.
And that's because it's interesting, Your Honor, that you raised that. There was I did a fair amount of work in the Minnesota legislature this year, and there was a potential law to align those two factors. And the reason I oppose that and would continue to oppose it is because we're not comparing an apple to an apple, right? In 518.17, we're comparing two parents for, you know, however they got there, whether they're married, unmarried. We're comparing two parents, people who stand at the same plateau. In 257.08, that is not what we have. We have either a grandparent or an unrelated third party who's resided with the child. So the best interest factors are not the same, nor do I think they should be the same. And I think what the court did here is just really quite candidly conflated those two issues. I think
Is it an easier burden then to get visitation than the custody issue?
No, because it's not just best interest, right? You have three factors under 257.08. You have best interest, you have established emotional tie, and you have you have to demonstrate that visitation time will not interfere with the parent-child relationship. So I think it's a more challenging, as it should be,
but
standard.
But as to the best interests alone, does the district court have more discretion because it isn't, the standard isn't the same as 518.17?
I don't think they have more discretion. I think they have to consider different considerations. You know, obviously in a 518.
Like what?
So they're currently, under the way the statute reads, it's all relevant factors. That's what, you know, where in 518.17 you have the designated custody factors that the court's required to go through and make findings on. But I think in a case such as this, when there is, and this is in the record as well, when there is a very significant layout of a number of particular challenges that the child faced after parenting time with the respondent, and the respondent is asked, well, why is this, why do you think, after offering no evidence, why do you think this is in the child's best interest? He essentially says, because I love him and I miss him. Well, that's not what the law should require or what the court should be analyzing. Plenty of people.
So what's missing here?
What's missing, first of all, is an appropriate analysis on the evidence in the record of the best interest factors by the court. The court basically made findings that were against the weight of the evidence by finding that this visitation was in the child's best interest. So that factor is missing.
The district court just weighed the evidence? I mean, it didn't ignore evidence. It said, yeah, I know she's got these complaints, but I think the relationship with Mr. Girding is more important than, you know, and now he's promising to make sure that the kid's showered and gets enough rest. So I think that's dealt with.
So I think there's other challenges under the best interest factors. There's two others that I think I want to highlight. First of all, kind of this degradation of the mother. Like, I will be candid, I've practiced law since 1997, and I have never, in my experience as a trial court practitioner, had a witness get on the witness stand and say that the other parent is a, quote, piece of blank. Like, I've never had that happen. So for a testifying witness to say that that is how they feel about the other parent, for that to not be denigrating, candidly, I don't know what would have been.
Well, I mean, he also knew you were about to impeach him if he didn't say that, mm-hmm. right, with the exhibits that you had stipulated.
But he said he still feels that way. And my follow-up question is, why would you say that? He could have said a lot of things, but what he said was, because it's true. So as he sat on the witness stand before the court who has to analyze whether he's going to denigrate the mother, contrary to what the statute requires, which is that you have to not undermine the parent-child relationship. That's really the key component that I think the district court disregarded, frankly, was that this is not the same. You know, I was reviewing the transcript in preparation for the argument, and the whole last two pages of the transcript are the district court, from my perspective, disregarding the law, looking at these two people, saying, well, shucks, people, we all just have to get along. You guys have to do better. And that's not what 257.08 requires. 257.08 requires the moving party, frankly, the party seeking visitation, has to actively demonstrate that they will not undermine. And he did not prove that. And there's no evidence in the record of that. In fact, all the weight of the evidence is contrary to that.
Can I ask you about that? So on the third factor, if I have it right, the interference with relationship, something mm-hmm. I was interested in your argument was Mr. Girding's, the district court's basically its analysis of whether or not Mr. Girding was going to follow all the rules that your client wanted to be followed for the care of J.H. While J.H. was in Mr. Girding's custody. And you make the point that, you know, your client is the person who has the fundamental right to dictate how J.H. is raised. And so can you expand a little bit on whether you think the district court's order appropriately responded to, as I read the district court's order, the district court kind of acknowledged, well, he's not doing these things like bathing, but that's not that big of a deal. And then on the flip side of that, so that's the softball question. The flip side, how do we get around the fact that the way the district court structured this is a little unique because the district court made all visitation the same time as the sibling, who is the child of Mr. Girding. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a unique circumstance here, I think, as well as the background of Mr. Girding raising J.H. for 7 years. Can you respond to those issues?
Sure. And I think it's not just a unique circumstance, Your Honor. I just want to point out that according to Gibbons versus Darst, which is CGDG, we always call it Gibbons versus Darst when talking about it, it's a very significant issue that he aligned and received 50% parenting time, and CGDG is very clear on that. But I think to start with the first question, I think it was not only the issues related to hygiene. There was bigger and broader issues. The denigration of the mother being one, the child's cultural competence and cultural identity being another, which again, frankly, I'm familiar with this judicial officer, and I will say the finding related to why the child's cultural heritage as a child of color just didn't matter because he was raised by two white people. I'm not verbatim citing exactly what was said, but it was something equally dismissive of how important J.H.'s cultural background and history is and will be to him moving forward, especially when there was testimony. Again, part of this is this against the weight of the evidence? And when Mr. Girding testifies, well, yeah, I told him that his haircut, which he obtained because he thought it was, the child obtained because he thought it was culturally appropriate, I think that haircut is stupid, and I told him that. Again, like, so it's not, it's, I think the way the, I think what the court did is took the facts that the court thought would align with, you know, an analysis of why Mr. Girding should have this substantial amount of parenting time and shoehorned it into the statute, and I think did so in a way that's clearly an abuse of discretion.
So the district court found in in the addendum, page 17 to 18, and paragraph 11, the district court discusses cultural needs and concludes there's no indication that respondent cannot meet JH's ongoing cultural needs and development. So what evidence in the record would you point us to support your argument that, and I assume you were referring to this when you were talking about the paragraph, that finding is clearly erroneous?
Well, first of all, Mr. Girding's own testimony, where when faced with a singular cultural issue, the child's haircut, he told the child it was stupid, and he told the sibling that it was stupid,
I mean,
and should be changed.
The testimony as it came in on that point, though, what I don't think was as clear cut. I mean, your question was, what have you done recently to honor Julian's background as a multi-ethnic child? Answer, not much, I guess. And you recently said a haircut he got looks stupid, correct? Yes. So I don't know that it was tied up. I mean, I understand. I mean, mm-hmm. You can read between the lines. Mm-hmm. And say, oh, well, the reason why Mr. Girding thinks that is because it's a culturally appropriate haircut for a biracial child. Mm-hmm. But that's not how the testimony came in. It came in, he thinks that the haircut is stupid, which is I could sit here and say that's a crass thing to say about a child's haircut and read between the lines, as I just said. But to Judge Cochran's point, it would seem to me that what you're asking us to do is reweigh the evidence here. Mm-hmm. And if there is specific testimony and evidence that shows that he's not going to honor this child's cultural identity and not satisfy the statute and his clear and convincing evidence burden, it would be helpful to know what you think exactly.
So I think the other testimony in the record is actually in the exhibits, and it's cited in the brief, and it's related to the relationship with the biological father in general, where he was asked in text or email, you know, about the importance of the biological father's relationship with the child, and he says something to the extent of, I don't care about that. Like, I don't care. Not relevant to me. Which is, again, I think it is the substantial weight of the evidence in this case. I mean, all of these cases, Gibbons versus Darr, Suhu versus Johnson, all of them are a little bit heavy on their facts. So I think the court does have to look at whether this court's weighing of those facts is reasonable, given the testimony, or an abuse of discretion, given the testimony and the exhibits. I think the exhibits were pretty disregarded, and I don't think they were followed very closely by the district court.
Can I interrupt mm-hmm. just for a minute? Because we've been talking a lot about weighing the evidence.
Yes.
So I have a question about the burden of proof mm-hmm. as to which parts of what. Mm-hmm. Because Suhu says clearly the burden of proof was on Mr. Girding, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the standard of proof was clear and convincing evidence. Mm-hmm. So does that just apply to whether Mr. Girding had a right to visitation with J.H. at all? Or does that also apply to the amount of visitation awarded? Or is that just an abuse of discretion standard? The amount then is up to the district court.
Well, I think that, you know, Suhu being followed up by CJDJ, and also there was, you know, I believe an amendment to the statute to address that factor seven, the substantial, or the evidentiary burden that the court is asking about. But I think, number one, there has to be proof on all three factors, right? We're probably not going to get that. And then I think the amount of the, I understand the court's question, which is, you know, Should that clear and convincing standard or preponderance standard, I don't think he meets that standard to get equal parenting time as a non-parent. I don't think he meets it under either level of proof, frankly. But my reading of it is that it applies to the statute as a whole. So I think the district court abused its discretion not only in awarding parenting time at all, but if he had awarded parenting time that had been consistent with case law, you know, one or two nights a week, or, you know, one night a week and one weekend a month, comparable to Gibbons versus Darst.
So how do we comport the abuse of discretion, clear error? Because the clear error, I'm confused about all this, quite honestly. So clear error is there's any evidence in the record to support the district court's finding of fact, we're required to affirm. But Suhu says it's clear and convincing evidence. Mm-hmm. So... And then later on in Suhu, it actually says, well, visitation, abuse of discretion. So what are we to be guided on? Because it seems like that's a key element.
And I agree with the court that it is a place that is unclear for providers in 257.08. So I think the follow-up analysis of Gibbons versus Darst, which is, you know, obviously an appellate court case, not a Supreme Court case, provides some additional guidance for this court in what you should be considering as far as the standard. But I do think that the court has to consider whether the court's determination on the whole was against the weight of the evidence, which we think that it was, given the fact that there was very substantial liberties taken in the order versus what the actual testimony and evidence produced.
So what is the exact relief you're asking?
We're asking that this court reverse outright and vacate the order.
So there would be no visitation.
Or the court could certainly send it back. You know, complicating matters is this case then transferred to Isani County. So certainly the court could send it back to the Isani County judge to determine if there should be an appropriate level of visitation. But equal, I mean, I'm out of time, so if I could finish answering the court's question.
Yeah.
I think equal parenting time for an unrelated third party, like essentially, you know, eliminates, if we were under a best interest standard, we're eliminating one half of my client's time with her child to someone who is not even the child's parent. And while he was not a party because he was not noticed by Mr. Girding, there's a biological father out there who would also potentially be entitled to time if he were to file action.
So you're challenging not just whether there should be visitation, but also the amount.
Correct.
That it's 50%.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and that is way beyond what any case of this court has held. All right.
Thank you, Ms. Gimmerling.
Thank you very much.
That concludes our oral argument calendar today. We will take that matter under advisement, and we'll issue a decision.